Hello everybody, my name is Jordan Templeton. I'm doing my long presentation on Topic 8, General Low Power Energy Optimization Techniques. The first paper is titled, On the Interplay of Dynamic Voltage Scaling and Dynamic Power Management in Real-Time Embedded Applications. It was written by two students at the Department of Computer Science and George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia. The main target of their work is battery-powered portable embedded devices, and the goal is to increase the runtime. In order to accomplish this goal, there are two main techniques that are typically used for this, but they're usually done exclusively. The two ideas are dynamic voltage scaling and dynamic power management. Dynamic voltage scaling is basically adjusting the voltage and thus the frequency of the CPU to reduce power consumption. The second idea, dynamic power management, is to selectively disable by putting to sleep certain portions of the processor, such as memory, I/O devices such as analog to digital converters, serial ports, things of that nature. And these things are typically done, it's usually one or the other. There's almost no research up to this point including both techniques. The main goal of the authors is to employ these techniques on a real-time system, and the idea is to employ both DVS and DVFS to reduce energy consumption and promote longer battery life. And these are on real-time systems, and so it's also very critical to maintain real-time system accuracy. A little background on dynamic voltage scaling is that CPU energy consumption is basically, it increases exponentially with operating speed. And the speed is determined by the voltage, typically. And so you can achieve great reductions in energy consumption by even small reductions in clock speed. The problem that you run into with dynamic voltage scaling is that performance also suffers when you reduce the operating voltage and the speed. And this is especially important for real-time systems. If it's not a real-time system, you know, it might just be a minor inconvenience to have to wait longer for a task to complete. But if it's a real-time systems are typically controls, for instance, maybe anti-lock brakes or something of that nature, and it's really imperative that the execution time is achieved within a certain time frame. And so part of employing dynamic voltage scaling is to be able to judge the execution time. Some of the main pros and cons of DVS are that you have to be careful to avoid slowing the system down too much. That's probably the biggest problem that you can run into, is just slowing the system down in a real-time application. One of the advantages to using DVS is that it's very well researched and well understood, and so there are plenty of existing energy management policies out there that already employ DVS, so it's relatively trivial to implement. Dynamic power management is pretty much the other major technique for energy consumption or energy management within embedded devices, and it's quite a bit different. Basically, nothing is done to affect the speed of the actual processor, and rather the energy savings come from selective sleep sleep period enabling of peripheral devices, such as memory, I.O., serial ports, analog to digital converters, things of that nature. One big thing to keep in mind with dynamic power management is there's something called break-even time. And this comes from the fact that there are overheads involved in putting peripherals to sleep and then waking them up. So the device needs to be able to predict how long it's going to be able to put a device to sleep to judge whether or not it's going to make sense to actually put the device to sleep. It is possible that putting the device to sleep and then waking it back up will consume more energy than it would have had it just remained in an idle state. The other issue, again, with that, because of we're talking about real-time systems, is that there are also timing penalties for wake up and shut down for the sleep mode. And so you have to remain conscious of those timing overheads. One of the biggest downsides of DPM that makes it difficult to employ effectively is that you really need accurate prediction of how much available sleep time there will be in order to determine if it makes sense to put the device to sleep, and that's called break-even time. DPM is typically more effective for low-duty cycles, which would be an execution that is performed for a very small portion of a given time frame. So that was a little bit of background on DVS and DPM. This paper is primarily based on the interaction between DVS and DPM, basically combining them in order to achieve even greater energy efficiency than using one or the other exclusively. These two methods are fundamentally different, and that makes it difficult to combine them in the same energy management policy. As an example, DVS is going to reduce the speed of the CPU, and so it's going to take longer for applications to execute. And because of that, there's going to be less opportunity for peripherals to go to sleep, and that's contradictory to DPM. So that's one of the biggest complications with this, is finding a balance between reduced CPU speed for energy conservation and also running the system fast enough to allow adequate sleep periods to make use of the DPM features. The way that the paper was laid out was, in the beginning they defined a system model and they gave their assumptions for their experimental work. Then they basically applied their system to a single processor or a single device system, utilizing one processor and one peripheral. Now, that's a relatively unrealistic model, but it was just for simplicity to explain the concept. And then they expanded their technique to a more general multiple device model that is more typical of a real world application. The key parameters that they used to describe devices and they used in their calculations of their energy consumption were their active and sleep state power consumption, their transition, their sleep and active transition times, and the energy overhead for device transitions. For their single device model, the authors used a single processor with a single peripheral. It's not very realistic of a a possible application, but it was just to illustrate the concept and to just lay out the framework for some of the math and calculations and terminology that would be used in the model. This figure illustrates the concept of the break-even time. Basically, 0 to D is the frame length, and the interval 0 to C illustrates the worst-case execution time, and the interval D minus B sub 0 illustrates the break-even time. The break-even time represents the minimum allowable time interval that a device can use for a sleep mode and still be beneficial to energy, to reducing energy consumption. This takes into account the device's transition times. Here the authors present some of their energy consumption results from their model. They don't really do a whole lot of explanation as to how they simulated their experiment or what their operating parameters were, but so we'll just have to kind of take their results for what they are. Basically, they've broken it into two regions. Region 1 is the area where the CPU speed is actually so slow that it is not even possible to put any of the system devices to sleep because there's simply not enough time. The break-even time is too great. An illustration, region 2 is the point at which the CPU speed has been increased enough that it is possible to make use of sleep modes for the various devices. And this transition frequency is denoted as F star. And an interesting thing to note from this particular figure is that part B of the figure shows that it is still possible to achieve the lowest possible energy consumption with a very low CPU speed versus utilizing sleep modes. And so in that particular instance, DVS would be dominant and there would actually be no DPM element used at all. And that's kind of an interesting thing to note. And then the authors present their multi-device model. Basically, they just generalize their algorithm to support a broader range of applications, and their algorithm supports devices with differing parameters, so you don't have to assume that all the devices are going to have the same parameters. And because of this, each device can also have its own break-even time. This figure is similar to the figure for a single device model, but it's been expanded to show the multiple break-even times within the same operational frame length. And one thing that's interesting is all the break-even times must be ordered in ascending order from smallest to largest break-even time in order for the algorithm to operate properly. And the way the algorithm selects which devices to transition into sleep mode is depends on where the worst-case execution time interval falls in relation to the break-even times. So whichever interval of break-even times it falls into, all the devices that have a smaller break-even time than that interval will be transitioned into a sleep mode. So to wrap up this paper with a conclusion, is it's much more difficult to employ DVS and DPM together compared with individually. It's almost trivial to employ one or the other, but having an effective algorithm to utilize both of them is quite difficult. But at the same time, the potential for energy savings is there, and so it is worthwhile to combine them. And kind of the last point to note about this paper is the authors make it very clear that this paper is some of the first work in the area of combining DVS and DPM, and they admit that it's not complete and as thorough as would be ideal. And it's really just kind of a proof of concept. I don't think they really intend it to actually make it into a concrete application. All right, the second paper is almost the same topic. The title of the paper is Power Management in Real-Time Embedded Systems Through Online and Adaptive Interplay of DPM and DVFS Policies. This paper was written by three students at the LEAT Research Laboratory in France. The main reasons motivating the research in this paper, they're pretty comparable to the motivation behind the first paper. You know, processing power is ever increasing, and thus, you know, increasing the electrical energy consumption as well. At the same time, the devices that are demanded by today's consumers are becoming smaller and smaller, and that results in less battery capacity availability and also less cooling capabilities. So not only do you want to reduce power consumption from the standpoint of battery capacity, but also from cooling capability. And at the same time, a lot of these systems are real-time systems, and so their timing is a critical aspect to keep in mind. Some of the previous work used to influence this paper is dynamic power management is a concept of selectively enabling a sleep mode for various peripheral devices within a microcontroller system, and then dynamic voltage and frequency scaling is a technique of reducing power consumption through regulating the CPU speed by reducing the voltage. And again, same as the previous paper, you know, both of these techniques are well understood independently, but little effort has been done so far to combine them and to really optimize energy savings. And the little bit of work that has been done in this area has been essentially to use DVFS only for the CPU, and DPM only for the peripheral devices of the CPU, and not the actual CPU itself. So the work that's proposed in this paper is to design a algorithm called hybrid power management. They're going to call it HiPowMan later in the paper, as a sort of acronym for it. Basically what it is instead of designing new energy management policies from scratch, this management protocol is going to essentially create a library of existing energy management policies and then come up with a mechanism to select the best policy for a given set of conditions. And this decision is going to be made at runtime, and so it will be dynamic. And also, this work is designed to work with multiprocessor systems. And also, because it will be multiprocessors, the control for each processor, it doesn't necessarily have to be global. It can be global, but it will also support partitioned control, so you have individual control over each processor rather than global power management policies for all of the processors at the same time. That would be less ideal. All right, this is basically an outline of the model and the notations used throughout the paper. There will be M processors. Each processor will support both DPM and DVFS, and they can be controlled independently. One assumption is that the DVFS is assumed to scale continuously, but that assumption can be lifted if need be, if the system you're trying to model only supports discrete ranges. One assumption that they're using is that voltage and frequency are always going to be adjusted together. There's a finite number of tasks to be executed within a given time frame. And each task has at least four major characteristics to describe it, referring to release time, worst case execution time, relative deadline, and periodicity. So the HiPALMAN scheme is basically a mechanism for selecting an already existing energy management policy. There's a library of pre-existing energy management policies, and the mechanism will select a subset of those policies, and that will be known as an expert set. And then each inactive policy are referred to as dormant policies. And it's interesting because all of the DVFS-based experts become dormant while the CPU is in an idle period, and all of the DPM-based experts become dormant when the CPU is executing a task. And also, active experts are called working experts. The fundamental design challenge for incorporating this selection mechanism is that the required information to make such a decision is not available all at once in order to decide which expert to utilize. For instance, any expert that is based on DPM requires scheduling information to adjust idle time intervals, and a expert based on DVFS requires information pertaining to the dynamic slack, and that varies depending on the workload. And an interesting note about this is HiPALMAN seeks the best energy policy within a given expert set, but not the absolute best possible energy policy. So based on that, there's definitely some room for improvement. And really the way HiPalMan works is it makes use of a machine learning algorithm that assigns a weight vector and a probability vector to the expert set, and then chooses the expert with the highest probability to become the actual working expert. The machine learning algorithm operates by evaluating the performance of each expert. This evaluation occurs at the end of the current task when it's completed. The experts that were working for a given task are evaluated based on the amount of energy that they saved, and the experts that were dormant during a given task are based on their potential energy that they could have conserved had they been active, and the employee loss factor in order to perform that calculation. The loss factor relates both energy savings and performance degradation, because there's always a performance degradation with DVFS, because you're essentially slowing down the CPU in order to save energy. And so you have to decide if the amount of performance degradation is acceptable. And this is kind of a pseudocode of the selection algorithm. Basically, in the beginning, all the weight factors are initialized, and then the expert having the maximum probability is chosen, and then the task is executed, and upon completion, the weight factors and probability vectors are updated, and then the loop repeats. The authors simulated their algorithm using STORM, stands for Simulation Tool for Real-Time Multiprocessor Scheduling, and this was based on the Marvell Xscale-based PXA270 processor, and they took measurements for three different parameters. They set up their simulation to allow for six discrete levels of voltage and frequency for the processor. And the next few slides are going to show plots of the performance. They ran the simulation four different times. They did it with no energy optimization technique. And they did a test with DVFS only, DPM only, and then the last test was using the HiPalMan scheme. So they compared all of them. The first comparison that the authors did was energy consumption versus the ratio of best case execution time to worst case execution time. And the results were kind of interesting. It makes sense that the non-optimized simulation would perform the worst and have the highest energy consumption. But it's interesting that the simulation using only DPM typically had the lowest energy consumption. And the HiPalMan scheme actually, in several situations, increased energy consumption a small amount. The next comparison was energy consumption versus the number of tasks And again, the non-optimized simulation performed the worst, with the highest energy consumption. But the lowest energy consumption came from using DPM only, and the energy consumption, again, just like previously, actually increased a little bit when high power man scheme was employed. It's kind of interesting. For the comparison of energy consumption versus variation in cumulative utilization, the non-optimized scenario performed significantly worse than the other three. The other three were all pretty close in performance, but again, DPM and high power man scheme were the closest, and in some situations DPM only actually did better, actually in more situations than high power man scheme. In the comparison of energy consumption versus the alpha weighting factor, the DPM only simulations were by far the most energy efficient, and high power man scheme was about mid road. And again, the non-optimized situation was, so far, has always been significantly worse than everything else. And the results of the energy consumption versus beta weighting factor were pretty much the same as the alpha weighting factor from the previous slide. Based on all of this, it appears that DPM alone appears to be the most efficient policy, and really the results of the simulations, they don't do the author's work any justice, because based on these, high power man scheme is not very effective, and the most effective energy management policy would be DPM alone. It's kind of interesting. So in conclusion, high power man scheme is more of a selection mechanism for a library of pre-existing energy management policies rather than an actual unique energy management policy. And based on the results from the simulations, DPM appears to be the most efficient method for energy conservation. One of the strong points of high power man scheme that's probably not clear in this paper, but seems like high power man scheme would be very flexible for varying workloads and would allow for multiple varieties of energy management policies to be employed together, and that this would suit a large range of applications to make a very unique and adaptive overall energy management policy. Both of the papers that were covered in this presentation were very, very similar, but there were a couple of major differences also that should be noted. The first paper proposes a new energy management policy that aims to combine DPM and DVFS, and the second paper does not aim to combine them, but rather select one or the other from a library utilizing information at runtime and attempting to choose the best policy from a given set. The other major difference is that the first paper is primarily focused on single processor systems, while the second paper is more aimed at multiple processor systems. And then I have a few critiques. A couple of things I just didn't like about the two papers. In the first paper, I didn't feel like they provided enough experimental data or really any justification to their claims. They had a lot of math and a lot of equations and calculations, but they really didn't seem to actually have tested their work. It seemed like more of a conceptual paper and did not appear to have much experimental work backing it. And then one of my major problems with the second paper, they claimed that their protocol will work equally well on single processor systems, but all of their simulations and experimental results are for multiprocessor systems, and they don't have any information relative to performance on a single processor system. That would have been kind of nice to see, since they claim that it will work well. And that's my presentation. I hope you guys liked it. Thank you.